وكلا نقص عليك من أنباء القرى إذا incidents and stories of the pious that have been related. And the purpose of relating the story of the pious, مَا نُثَبِّتُ بِهِ فُؤَادَكَ. With these stories, you gain some strength. That these are the pious, these are the elders, they are the forerunners in this path. And when they have been the forerunners, then what was their style, what were their ways, what was the very essence of their lives. So this brings strength, it brings courage, it brings strength. It is man's tabiat that he wants to have a role model. Whatever he's doing, he wants to see an example. And when he sees an example, then he wants to imitate. Whether it is good or bad, whether it is worldly or religious, if there is an example before him, then he imitates and he moves on. So the importance of having the right type of association. And when we talk of association are those things that will influence you. Like a person can influence you, then a book can also influence you. Media can also influence you. A billboard advertisement can also influence you. So all these things influence you. Many a times you were not interested in something, but you kept on reading the advertisement and you began to create a crave for it. Like we hear of Coca-Cola, right? And really it isn't something to be drunk. But then the amount of advertisement, the way they advertise, the way they market, that they get you right where they need to get you. Right? And then you become addicted, you can't do without it. So what is this? This is that influence. Influence by reading and seeing. You looked and you saw, so you became impressed. When you became impressed, then you only feel satisfied after you have drunk it. Otherwise, it doesn't have anything really in it. So this influences, whether they are right or whether they are wrong, then one needs to be very, very, very careful about it. Takes on the right influence and avoids the wrong. One Buzrug was going home, en route he saw some type of illicit behavior. Like how you find boys or girls flirting with each other. So he saw something like this. So he came home and he was so overcome by what he had seen, is he urinated blood. After some days he saw something similar again. Now, he was overcome, but not overcome like how he was overcome the first time. And by the third or the fourth time, now there was no effect. He became immune to it. Allah has created, he has created emotions in us, right? He has created feeling in us and created emotions. And these emotions and feelings, they help you actually. See, the first time when he saw it, what was the feeling? So he felt disgusted, he felt horrible. So that was like a break to stop the person, right? He felt so disgusted about it. But you get confronted with the same situation all the time, then that initial feeling that you had, that initial feeling no longer remains. So every other vice, every other evil is the same. See, we talk about insurance, for example, right? So, the way they market it and the way people talk about it. Now if someone talks about it, you don't feel the pain within your heart. Nothing, no feeling. So the amount of marketing that goes on and the amount people talk about it, that you don't feel indifferent towards it. Whereas it's a combination of gambling and a combination of gambling and interest. Like going to a casino and a bank and doing a deal there. So how hard don't you feel? How difficult don't you feel? Now it's a combination of the both. If someone has to tell you, you know, we saw you at the casino, then how bad don't you feel? So this is a combination of the both. But they just gave a different name. They kept on talking about it, that every second, third person has got some type of insurance. No feeling. Feeling you become totally immune to it. So this is influence. So the importance of not getting influenced, number one, and not listening to this thing here. As far as possible. That's why they say, in the dhikri salihin, tanzilur rahma. When righteous people are being discussed, then you find rahmat is descending. Good things and righteous behavior is being discussed. Then rahmat of Allah Ta'ala, Allah Ta'ala's special mercies descend. But it is also true that if wrong is being discussed and wrong people is being discussed, then evil descends. Now you find a gloominess, a darkness, a cloudiness covering your heart. Then you found a light, a goodness feeling, a good feeling covering your heart. And now you feel some type of a darkness and a gloominess that's covering your heart. So generally we are not so concerned about these type of things. We'll talk about the vice and then we become immune to it. And then we may even commit it, but we don't feel it in our hearts. Because it becomes so common. People are discussing it so frequently that amount of evil that is supposed to be felt in the heart, you don't feel it any longer. See? So that is why we go on talking about the righteous. As far as possible, one is that we talk about the righteous all the time. And number two is not to be in a place where evil is taking place. Either the evil is taking place or about wrong people. We don't frequent this type of places. If we have to, then we go there just in to the extent of necessity, need. Like a mall now. Tell me which vice doesn't take place in a mall. Any vice that you can think of is there. Right? Nearly every vice that you can think of is there in the mall. But just that is done in a little bit of a more glorified way. It's done with a little bit of a glossy way and a glorified way. So you don't feel the evil of it. But otherwise that same vice takes place there. So when we have to go to these places, we go to the extent of need. Like how you go to a toilet, then to the point of need you go, and you come out. Now it's become like a culture that we go to these places. We go with the family, children, we go with the wife, everybody goes all together to these type of places. So after some time, everybody feels immune towards it. They feel it's right. They want to imitate, either in their dressing, either in their behavior, ways, etc. They want to imitate to some extent the wrong that's taking place. So a Muslim must understand what is his place in this whole life, in this world. What's your place? The most important thing to understand is to understand what's your place. If you know your place, then you are winning. And if you don't know your place, then you don't know where you're supposed to be. Then you look evil you look wrong and you don't feel comfortable. Why? Because you're not in your place. Like it is. There is some play, you know, they have plays. Shakespeare and all, they have a play, right? So, in the play, you know your place. You know which place you come in and what is your role. You know that. So, for you to get in, you don't feel difficult because this is my place, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. But you don't know your place and you don't know what's your role and you're coming into the play. So you feel very difficult, you feel very uncomfortable, and the people that watch you also feel, no, it's not the right thing. You also feel awkward, and the people that observe you also, they also feel that this is not the right thing for this person here. He's not supposed to be here. So they feel uncomfortable, and you will also feel uncomfortable. Okay. So therefore it is very, very important for every person, moreover for a Muslim, he must know his place in life. Knowing the place in life is so important, right? That if you don't get your place, if you don't get your place, then you'll bring the roof down. You know, in worldly sense, in a worldly sense, if you don't get your place, then you'll bring the roof down, right? You went up to some place, whatever whichever place you went, and the hotels, everything was booked out, right? It was booked through internet or something. You booked everything. You were supposed to be staying there for 2 weeks or something, and you booked, right? And you come up there, and they say they don't have the place for you. What happens to you? Doesn't it irritate you? Why it irritates you? That was your place. And you're not in your place. Because you're not in your place, you feel very irritable, right? Don't you feel that? Or take an even better example. Where the person is not in his place. It's your house, for example, and someone else comes and takes control of your house. He lives in your house as though it's his own house. Now he's not in his place. How do you feel? Do you feel comfortable? Do you feel relaxed? Or you go and occupy someone else's house? Right? Do you feel comfortable? You don't feel comfortable, that person doesn't feel comfortable. So, not being in your place, it makes you feel very, very uncomfortable. It's not the right thing, and apart from it not being the right thing, it will make you feel very uncomfortable. It's not the right thing. I'm not supposed to be doing this. I'm not supposed to be behaving like this. I don't know my place. In a namaz, the person is not in his place. Right? You know, the rows are supposed to be together, and the rows are not together. He's standing one side, and the other person is standing one side. Okay? How does it feel? Does it feel right? Does it feel right? Why? He's not in his place. He's supposed to be facing in this end, and he's facing on the other end. Now, it's even worse. You say, namaz is not valid. Don't you say that? Because he's not in his place. He's supposed to be behind the imam, and he is in front of the imam, what will you say? Namaz is not valid. Why again? He's not in his place. The woman's supposed to be behind, and the man's supposed to be in front. Now, she came in front, and the man went behind. Will you say that the namaz is valid? Namaz is valid again. Why is not in place? So, everything sees, it appears to be right when it's in its place. When it's out of its place, then it doesn't have that value. The respect is gone, the value is gone, you don't appreciate it. Apart from everything else, you don't feel comfortable, you don't feel relaxed. No matter how glorified it may be. But you don't feel the comfort, you don't feel relaxed. This hair that you got, right, black, healthy, and beautiful hair you've got, right? Skin, very good color, very cold, good complexion you have. Clear, good, healthy complexion. Hair you've got very good, right? So as long as the hair is in its place, the skin is in its place, then it appears to be very good. beautiful, good looking, you look handsome, right? It's about the most beautiful thing, be it a boy or a girl, right? And the hair is in the place, then how much of beauty it adds to that girl or to that boy, hair of the head, and how much of beauty it would add, right? But the same hair, if it is cut, the skin is cut and kept aside now, there won't be a thing that's ugly as that. You say, hey, whose hair is this, whose skin is this? Just go and throw it away, and bury it, move it away from here. So in its place, it looks very beautiful. And you shift it from its place, then there isn't a thing that is as ugly as that. You know, if you can only learn the sabak here, then put everything in its place. And in its place, you will feel comfortable. Out of place, you won't feel comfortable. وَضْعُ الشَّيْءِ فِي غَيْرِ مَحَلِّهِ. That's the definition of zulm. To place something incorrectly. That is zulm. Put it in its place, everybody is happy. In a masjid or in a home, then there are some things that are placed at certain points, right? So it's in its place, then you feel nice. Right? You've got a dining room, so you've got the chairs there in the dining room. So you feel relaxed, and if there is a need, then you know exactly, all right, chairs are here, I might just go and pull the chair from here. Right? You feel relaxed. But he took out the chair from the dining room and placed it inside the toilet. Now, do you feel comfortable? Do you feel relaxed? Does the bathroom or the toilet, does it look nice also? You don't feel nice, you don't feel easy, and you feel miserable. You want to shout the person, why? Was this the place to place this chair? Don't feel nice about it. The place to go and relieve yourself was the toilet, right? And in place of relieving yourself in the toilet, use the kitchen sink to go and relieve yourself. So this got a sink here also, it's everything going out to the same drain. So I'm just relieving myself. Will that be acceptable in any home? No, out of place. So everything, if it's in its place, then it is valued, you feel comfortable, and people feel relaxed. But if it's not in its place, you don't have the value, no relaxation, you feel miserable. Now, the Anbiya alayhi wasalam, they were the initiators of this. They place everything and place it in its place. Even in Jannat also, you have things placed in its place. وَأَكْوَابٌ مَوْضُوعًا وَأَكْوَابٌ مَوْضُوعًا. That the utensils, cups, etc. are placed in their places. They are kept in their places. And the reason is obvious. When that cup or that cutlery is kept in its place, you using it or someone else is using it, you or your wife is using it. Right? You used it and you left it in its place. The second time you want to use it, it's very easily accessible, right? You know where it is, straight away. But the first time you placed it, right, and then you left it somewhere else. Now, you need to use that cup. You need to use that cutlery, but it is not in its place. Now, don't you find a problem? Don't you find some uneasiness in your mind? Don't you find that uneasiness? Feel that uneasiness. A woman is supposed to be within the home. Now, within the home, she looks nice. Within the home, within the confine of the home, she looks nice, respectable, she's comfortable, she's at ease. But you take her out of the home, you push her out of the home, go to the malls, you become a professional person, go and study, and go and do this, and go and do whatever else, right? Now, does she look nice? Now, she doesn't look nice. Either it seems as though she's a very poor woman because she needed to go out of the home to venture for an income. Now, you like anybody to look at you as though you're a poor garib. So, a garib had to go out to get something to run the house. So, this woman went out of the house. So, what pushed out of the house was need. So, need pushed her out. When need pushed her out, So she's a needy person. She's a needy person, she's gareeb. Now, would you feel appreciated if someone called you gareeb? If some gareeb came to the house, will you feel good? Well, you won't feel good. You won't feel respectable. Why? Your place was within the house. Why you went out of the house? So you became disgraced, humiliated because you left your place. And you remain in your home. Then even in Jannat, Allah Pak says, مَخْصُورَاتْ فِي الْخِيَامِ حُورٌ عِينَ and مَخْصُورَاتٌ فِي الْخِيَامِ confined to their places, to their pavilions. Stay there. Allah Pak doesn't speak about the woman of Jannat and the gallivanting everywhere, running around, going for a spree, for a ride, for a spin, and now what they call it, where they go for a hike. Huh? You heard about, even the question, all the whores going for a hike, or the woman going for a hike. You don't hear that. Why, there must be a reason why the Quran didn't say all this. Hurum maqsuratun fil khiyam. They confined to their pavilions, to their places. Now they look respectable, they look right there. But now they strewn and they thrown out of their homes. So when a person is thrown out, some need pushes him out. So when a need pushed him out, then he's a needy person. When he's a needy person, now does he have respect? You will not disgrace him. But if someone tells you that you are a poor person, sorry, you feel very sorry, poor, gareeb. So do you feel respected? Do you feel honored? Do you feel appreciated about it? You don't feel appreciated about it. So it was need that pushed that woman out. Whether it was a professional person or not a professional person, businesswoman she was, but she went out of the house. Now she doesn't have that respect any longer. Even if she was serving on a plane, right? Now, when you analyze the job, then there is no difference between her and the Makoti in your home. Right? Same work that the Makoti is doing, she's doing. But just that she's got a glorified name, hostess. From the Makoti, right, you just change the name from Makoti to hostess. But by changing the name, you don't change the reality. Is the reality changed? You don't change the reality. It's the same that Makoti is still a Makoti, whether she's on the ground or she's on the air, Makoti is still Makoti. Right? But if someone has to tell your wife that she's a Makoti, right, will you appreciate that? You don't appreciate it. Why don't you appreciate it? Why don't you, you know, you will not disrespect, all right, you will not disrespect that maid that is working for you. But if someone tells, you know, your wife is a maid now, how do you feel? Do you feel comfortable? Do you feel relaxed? Do you feel at ease? Don't feel nice about it. So now she's earned that disrespect because she left her place. She, of her own choice, she left her place and she went to work in that type of a disgraceful environment. So now she's disgraced. She won't earn that respect any longer now. She won't be respectable. So her place is the home. She's at home, then she's respected. After the Hajjatul Wida, then Nabi Sam told the Azwaja Mutahharat, Hadi Summa Luzumul Husr. Abu Dawud Sharif comes to, okay, for this, you'll be allowed to leave the home. What? For this, in other words, you'll have to go for Hajj. So, for these type of reasons like Hajj, or for example, Umrah, then for these type of important reasons, you are allowed to leave the home. After that, remain. Husr is a plural of Hasir. Hasir, you know, we form namaz, Hasir, Chatai, straw mat, Husr, Hasir. Then you remain upon your Hasir, upon your straw mat. Then don't move out of there. So that was showing to the woman, impressing upon them that this is your place. You remain here. Now,
When this thing goes out of hand, you know, women are going out, they're leaving their homes. They're leaving their homes so much, that now a Muslim woman will also begin to ask, is it not permissible for us to go and study and become a professional woman? What happened? They became immune, you see. Like I told you that Buzrug, when he left his home, right, and he became so disgusted. And after that, witnessing it all the time, repeatedly, then he became immune to it. So the women also, they're seeing this all the time, seeing, listening, talking, discussing, they became immune. When they became immune, now they began to behave like those women are behaving, like those kuffar women are behaving, they are behaving. But where they got, where this culture come from? This culture came from them witnessing this other woman, kuffar woman, doing the same. So if they can do it, why can't our woman do it? If their woman can drive, then why can't our woman drive? If they can be professional, can't we be professional, right? So they get the cue from who? From kuffar woman. Not from the Azwaj al-Mutahharat, not the Sahabiyat. Do you have any Sahabiyat going out, professional woman? Gaini, you heard any Sahabi woman going out? Doctor, physician, lawyer or something, right? So our grandmothers and great-grandmothers, Allah Pak's Fazl, they got the cue from the Azwaj al-Mutahharat, they got the lead from Sahabiyat. Because they saw the Sahabiyat and the Azwaj al-Mutahharat, they didn't go out of their homes. And now today's women, where are they getting the lead from? They're getting the lead from kuffar women. The kuffar women became the leaders. Otherwise, if this was the norm, right, then, and this was the way to adopt and emulate, then the Sahabiyat and the Azwaj al-Mutahharat would have been the forerunners in that as well. Na'uzubillah. They would have started it off first. But they didn't do it. Nor did the pious of the past. And when I say past, even our great-grandmothers, they didn't do this thing. Now suddenly, now in this 21st century, we saw the need for it. Saw the need for it, so we pushed the woman out of the house. And we found need. Right? But who's the leader in this? Kuffar woman are the lead. Right? Now, إِذَا سَبَتَ الشَّيْءِ سَبَتَ بِلَوَازِمِهِ When a thing is established, right, then everything that goes with it, it comes with the package. It comes in the package. You can't say, you know, strip it off the package. It comes with the package. You buy Coke, it comes in the can, right? It comes with a bottle. Although the can or the bottle will not be drunk, but it's part of the the sale. It's part of the sale, right? When you go to buy Coke, they don't say, all right, bring your glass and we'll fill it up. Do they say that? No. They don't say. It's not like paraffin, it's not like petrol, that where's your bowser and we'll fill it up. So, إِذَا ثَبَتَ الشَّيْءِ ثَبَتَ بِلَوَازِمِ. When something is established, it comes with all the package, all the packaging. Right? It comes as part of the packaging. So now, if a woman has to go out of the house, then all the wrong that is associated, see, all the wrong that is associated with that. Now, among the wrongs that take place, look, to show you the wrongs that take place, and that have taken place already, and take place now. Because my work is such that I have to speak to youngsters, elderly people, middle age, all classes. So youngsters will come for the Islam and their correction as well. And youngsters will have problems of this nature, you know. Their problem will be girlfriends, etc. They want to make Islam from all that. So when you get into them and you ask them, how do you get stuck into this? They say, no, I'm schooling, so what? إِذَا سَبَتَ الشَّيْءِ سَبَتَ بِلَوَازِمِ. When you go to school, then you have to have a girlfriend. So, and I ask them, then what do you mean that you have to have? You're in an Islamic school, in a big, good Islamic school. Right. So Mora, they will tell you, nearly every youth that you counsel and you try and correct, says, they'll tell you,
that approximately 85% to 90% of the girls are involved. So you ask them, how do they get involved? You know, there's a lot of ways you can do it. Lots of ways you can get yourself involved, get those girls involved. Right? They're going to school, but they don't go to school. The boy got some car or something, and they go to the cinema. Right? Going to some mall. And then what? Say, now we do everything. What was not supposed to be done, everything is done. Everything is done. To the last, from Alif to Wassalam, everything is done. At the ages of 7, 8, 9, and they are doing it. How they do it? They are doing it. They say they are doing it. And not just one person, not two persons. Why? Why are we doing it? Because Muslim women also need to become doctors. So at the altar of becoming a doctor, at the altar of medicine, hundreds and thousands of Muslim women has to go into this, get exposed to zina environments, just that so that 5 out of 10,000 may become doctors. Is it worth the price? You know, when we value something, we look at the pros and the cons. Right? We have to spend this to get this. Right? We got doctors, but what price we had to spend to get that type of doctors? Was it worth the price? We ask ourselves, was it worth the price? Right. Now, after then, she got married. When she got married, she had this type of habits. When she had this type of habits, then those old habits die hard, right? Somehow or the husband discovers that she had these habits. Now, these marital problems. Every now and then he is teasing her. He's making a mockery. Yeah, you know what you did? You know where you came from? Or you all are going for a ride or for a shopping or something, and that old boyfriend met. Now, the woman is there, her children are there, and she can't resist the temptation to talk to that man. You see, but where you start from? No, Muslims have to become doctors also. They can't be backwards. Because Muslim women also need to be treated. When they need to be treated, then you need Muslim women. But to get that right, then so many have to be sacrificed. See, so even if there's a need, you know, I ask you, is it worth the price? Imagine it was your daughters, right? And they had to be, they had to progress. And for them to progress, they had to be experimented like this. Do you appreciate that? Do you value that? See? So you see, either sabata shay, sabata bilad. Life, because you have to school, girl has to be pushed out of the home, right? And then she has to take up higher studies, right? There's women that write books now, even white women that write books now. Some of it I've seen myself. Someone asked me to go and peruse through it. So it's a general norm with women, right? General norm. That they are too conscious about their looks and their images. How they look amongst people, how they look. They're very conscious about it. Like you see a man coming out of the house, it's all right. He'll just wear a shirt, skirt or something and he'll come out of the house. He's not too worried about how he looks. Right? But a woman, when she comes out, then she's got her hair done, she's got the lipstick, she's got some powder, dress, wearing perfume, the right type of shoe matching with the dress, Everything, tip and top, and then she comes out of the house. She doesn't just come out like how a man would come out. Right? So she comes out different, and a man comes out different. وَمَنْ يُنَشَّأُ فِي الْحِلْيَةِ The Qur'an Sharif also bears testimony to that, that she is adorned in all this jewelry. So she wants makeup, she wants that cosmetics, and the cosmetics is part of her makeup. You can't say that she mustn't put on cosmetics. It's part of her makeup. You know, that makeup is because she wants to have that type of impression in people. She doesn't want to be seeming to be not looking nice and appealing. So therefore, if she has to go to a second walima or nikah, she needs to have a different dress, outfit, shoes, everything that works. Completely different. She's so conscious about how it looks. And did you ever worry about
Second, while you are going, I need to have another kurta. All kurtas are white, same thing you're going with. And you see the difference. So it's abundantly clear. It's abundantly clear. You know it, you see it all. So this white woman is writing that book, and then she's saying that it's a tendency in women that if they want good passes, right, they want to pass, and all, they'll go to any extent to gain that mark. To any extent. What she's saying something. She's conveying a message. She wants something, so she'll make any type of favor to any person, give him any favor, just to see to that she gets the type of a pass. Now, for what? See, for what is she doing this? Naturally, what is women have got this, that they want to be appearing to be good, right? Their dresses, whatever, makeup, cosmetics, etc. They want to appear to be good, right? Then with that, because ar-rijalu qawwamun, men supposed to be over them all the time, so it shows that if they are not taken care of, they will perish. So someone has to take care of them. So who perishes? The one that doesn't have security. In other words, of her own, she feels insecure. On her own, she feels insecure. She wants some type of security. More than other relationship, what she wants some type of security. That's why the hadith also speaks about women. One of the words that the hadith uses is diya. That if she is neglected, then she will perish. She will just perish. So she needs someone to secure her. Right? See? So she will do that favor just for her security. Not because she wants that type of a life. She wants that, but she wants a security. And man will take advantage. You see, something coming in for free. Why mustn't I go for it? So every woman will have this. She needs that security, and she wants to have an appeal in her looks. Right? Now these two things can be used correctly, and they can be used incorrectly. If she is pushed out of her place, then the same two things will be used incorrectly. That feeling of that's insecurity now, someone will exploit it. Because she's like that. She feels insecure, right? She's got a feeling of insecurity. That is why you'll find sometimes a woman is going through a difficult patch in a marriage, right? But she sticks on. She tags along, right? Why she tags along? Because she feels that I got some security, and if I move away from this marriage, what's going to be the security like for me? What is going to be the security for me? So she says, I'd rather just stick along with this marriage. I don't want to become insecure. See, that's why she goes for it. So that feeling of insecurity is part of her makeup. And therefore she makes all those sacrifices, right? And when it's a good woman, then this takes her to the right end. Because any woman, for that matter, when she's married, she left the home and she went into the marital home, for a few days she'll feel uncomfortable because she has to readjust. Especially if she was absolutely chaste and clean, you know. No relationship, no SMS, no phoning and all. She's gone to a new home, so it will take some time for her to adjust. But the feeling that I got a security will keep her there. See, that I've got some security now will keep her there. Then after that, eventually she will settle there. And then that becomes a home. But as you are changing and shifting, you do feel a little bit of insecurity, don't you feel? You feel that little bit of insecurity, but this insecurity works to her advantage. So, these feelings of insecurity, and like I said, she wants to have an appeal on herself and her body, that also works to her advantage, because when she's got that, then she saves the man from every haram after that. The woman, she's making herself, she's adorning herself, some cosmetics, whatever. But in the process, isn't that man being saved from any other wrong advice? He's being saved. So these same two things can be used the correct way and can be used incorrectly. But what I'm showing is, what I'm showing here, is when that woman is thrown out of her home, she's pushed out of home, then what vices she's exposed herself to. Now, we have shut our eyes. So when you shut our eyes, then we can't see those vices. So many evils. Now, one is she loses her respect. She feels that her respect is in that degree and that profession. But her respect is not there. One old man, professional also, he told me once that one white professor woman professor, she was retiring. At the end of her career, she's retiring. But because she was very successful, a very successful teacher and professor, so all her students wanted to give her a farewell party. So they gave her a farewell party. And the end of this type of a get-together, then they will ask the professor also to give some parting advice. It's normal. That's the procedure. Some of her life experiences, and what we should be doing. That in all this career of yours, you've been teaching or you've been lecturing for 40 years, some odd. So in this, some gems, some advice that you can share with us. So she came up to the stage and she's advising her people, her own students. Many of them have become PhDs, doctors, etc. So she's advising them. So she says, you see, I wish to study, and I studied, and I excelled, really excelled. I excelled with distinctions. And then I lectured in the university for so many years, and I've been blessed with so many beautiful students as well. So in that respect also, I excelled. I was a good lecturer, and I had excellent students as well. But there is a grief and there's a pain in my heart that will remain with me till I hit the grave. Till I touch the grave, there will be a pain and a grief and a sorrow in my heart. And the sorrow is so deep, I don't think that anything can compensate for the sorrow and the grief that I have. So the students are anxious to know what was the grief. So she says the grief is this, that I'm prepared at this age of mine, I'm retiring, and I've seen life, and the ups and the downs of life, I've seen everything. Now, I feel this pain in my heart. If I was given a second chance to live, given another chance to live my life, then I would have never studied. I would have never been a lecturer. I would feel much more fulfilled if I was given the blessings of mothering just one child. Being in a marriage and mothering one child, I would feel that I fulfilled the role of a woman. Yeah, I've done everything, but my womanhood, I didn't fulfill the role of a womanhood. That is my makeup. I'm a woman. And a woman would only feel satisfied and fulfilled when she could fulfill her role. She didn't fulfill her role, she would feel a void within her all the time. So now, I passed that age because I'm an Aisa now. I'm past 60, so I can't bear any children. Now, this is going to be a grief and a pain in my heart right to the time I touch the grave. See? So again, the same thing. Everything is smart, is looking good, is attractive when it's in its place. So now she says, if I had a second chance to live my life, then I would have done this. But now she's past that time. She's past that time, she can't reverse the whole thing. She can't reverse the clock. See? So the beauty of the teaching of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, by everything, keep it in its place. Keep it in its place, it will look beautiful, attractive, you'll feel comfortable, you'll feel relaxed, and apart from all that, the person will be respected as well. Like I said, we push the girl out of the home, right? What happened? How much of wrong she's exposed to? And you say, well, it's all girls, madrasa, all girls school. Even there, there's vice. Because it's not just your daughter that is attending. A lot of other girls that are coming in. And every girl that is coming in with a background. And she's coming with a background that they can't, you don't expect them to be sitting idle there. They'll be discussing, all right. You read Harry Potter. 50 Shades of Grey, you read. Oh, you're so backwards. Or this one will feel backwards that I didn't do this thing yet. So she goes and experiments with this. And they actually say each other, they tell you, you haven't even experimented with a boyfriend. You're so backwards. Which farm are you coming from? See? Now this one is prompting that one. Now then she says, no, you know, I must be also looking smart like them. So let me go and experiment. Like everybody else has experimented. So I must experiment like how they experimented. See? But you see this, إِذَا ثَبَتَ الشَّيْءِ ثَبَتَ بِلَوَازِمِهِ. When something happens, it comes with the package, total package. You can't say, strip it off the package. Can't. It comes and it comes with a package. Right? Like you want to go by plane, right? For Umrah. So you jump the plane now. Now you're not sitting. So they will ask you to sit. And they'll insist. So I say, it comes with a package, you have to sit. Say, no. You'll miss the point. I want to go Piyadal Hajj. I want to go Piyadal Hajj. Pray, you came on the plane, now you'll have to sit. Sabat al-Shay, Sabat al-Lawazimi. Understand? When you've boarded the plane, you'll have to sit. No matter what happens, but you'll have to sit. You can't say you want to go Piyadal Hajj now. But you wanted to go Piyadal Hajj, you shouldn't have taken the plane. But now the moment you've taken, you're embarked onto the plane, you'll have to sit. So Allah Ta'ala give us that tawfiq, that understanding, to put everything in its place. There's respect in it, there's comfort in it, there's ease in it. Right? And overall, each person feels fulfilled for his role. Like a woman feels fulfilled. I've mothered so many children, I've got a child, I've got a grandchild. So she feels that her role has been fulfilled. But you move her from her role, ask her to do something else, she doesn't feel fulfilled. She doesn't feel fulfilled. Like for example now, you have to swap roles with your wife now. You don't do the shopping, you don't do anything. And she does all the working. And you must look after the child, you must look after the house. Do you feel fulfilled? Just imagine for a moment, now you swap the whole role, right? Do you feel fulfilled? You don't feel fulfilled. You don't feel complete. You feel a void. But I'm not meant for this. I'm not meant for the kitchen, to look after children and wash pots and all that. That's not my job. Don't you feel like that? You feel a void. Why? You're not in your place. Now they ask you to go and do something even 10 times harder, you feel not fulfilled. I went there, I did my job, whatever I need, I offloaded the truck, everything I did. Now you feel fulfilled. Although that was much more difficult, but you felt fulfilled. And here you felt a void within you. So Allah Ta'ala grant us that tawfiq that we can understand this sabak, you know, that everything be in its place. Allah Pak tawfiq.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. We will discuss some of the adab and sunnahs of namaz. That when commencing the namaz, person would make the niyat of the salah facing towards the qibla, keeping a minimum distance of approximately 4 fingers between both the feet, and the feet would also face towards the qibla. And then you would stand upright, and the head would not be lowered, nor will you pull your head back, but rather it would be kept straight, and your gaze would be fixed at the place of sajda. And then you would raise both your hands with the palms facing towards the qibla. That some people make the mistake and have the hands, the palms facing the face. So the palms will be facing towards the qibla, with the fingers also kept straight, and they will not be kept widely apart, and nor would they be kept tight, but rather they would be kept in a normal position. And one would raise his hands to the extent that the thumb would be in line or touching the earlobe. That one won't just raise his hands to his shoulders, but rather the sunnah is to raise it so that it is in line with the earlobes. And then you would say the takbir, Allahu Akbar, and you would lower the hand, both the hands. Then you would place the right hand over the left hand, and both of them would be placed below the navel. And then you would form a ring with the small finger and the thumb of the right hand around the wrist of the left hand, and the remaining 3 fingers would be kept over the forearm. And then a person would then commence with the salah, that you would first start off by reciting the thana, subhanakallahumma wa bihamdika. And this would be recited by all, whether a person is reading individually or whether he's reading behind the imam or the imam himself. And thereafter you would recite the ta'awuz, a'udhu and bismillah, surah Fatiha and the surah to follow. But if a person is reading behind the imam, then he would just suffice on reading the thana, subhanakallahumma wa bihamdika. And for him to read anything more would be makruh. So he would remain silent, whether it is a loud salah or whether it is a silent salah, the one reading behind the imam would remain silent. Then upon the completion of surah Fatiha, you would say Ameen softly, and then you would continue with the surah to follow. And upon the completion of the surah, then you would say the takbir, Allahu Akbar, and proceed to ruku. And these takbirs, that when a person is moving from one posture to the other, which we call takbir intiqaliyah, then a person would commence the takbir as soon as he starts moving from the original posture to the next posture. And he would complete the takbir once he reaches the next posture. That it won't be that he must start moving first and then start the takbir. But simultaneously, together with moving, he would also say the takbir. So after completing the surah, you would say the takbir, Allahu Akbar, and you would come into the posture of ruku. And in ruku, one would ensure that the shin that is kept straight, the arm is also would also be kept straight without the elbows jutting out. The head and the back would also be kept in a straight line. So a person would make ruku with the elbows kept straight, with the shin also kept straight, the head and the back would also be kept straight. And as far as possible, one would also try to push his thighs forward, that a person would not bend it, but rather a person would keep his shin and push his thighs forward. And in ruku, the gaze would be fixed at the place of at your feet. And in the ruku, you will recite the tasbih, Subhana Rabbi al-Azim, thrice. And whilst in ruku, a person would hold his knees very tightly with the fingers spread apart. And upon the completion of the tasbih, a minimum of 3 times or any other odd number of times, you would then say, Sami Allahu liman hamida, and come up from the posture of ruku, the posture of quma. And when a person is in the posture of quma, then you would keep both the hands at the side, and you would be in a state of ta'dil arkan, that a person should not rush to the posture of sajda, but rather after getting up from ruku, a person would remain standing until he is at ease. And if a person is reading salah individually, then he would say Sami Allahu liman hamida, followed by Rabbana wa lakal hamd. And if a person is the imam, then he would just suffice on reading Sami Allahu liman hamida. And the muqtadi, the one reading behind the imam, he would suffice on just saying Rabbana wa lakal hamd. And then from the posture of quma, you would then proceed to the posture of sajda. And here again, when saying the takbir, Allahu Akbar, you would commence the takbir as soon as you start moving, and then you would end of the takbir once you reach the posture of sajda. And when going into sajda, one would try to keep his back straight, and it would be the knees that would touch the ground first, then the hands, then the nose, and lastly the forehead. The person won't put his hands first down, unless a person is old and he's incapable. But if a person is fit, then a person would first place his knees onto the ground, then his hands, then his nose, and lastly his forehead. So he'd proceed into the posture of sajda by starting off the takbir from the standing posture, that Allahu Akbar, and you would end off the takbir once you reach the posture of sajda. And in sajda, a person would place his hand between both the palms, and you would keep a gap between the stomach and the thighs. A person won't keep himself crouched, but rather there would be a gap between his stomach and his thighs. And you would keep your fingers closed whilst in the posture of sajda. Your gaze would be fixed towards your nose, and your elbows would be lifted, raised off the ground, and your arms away from your sides. A person won't crouch himself and place his hands, his elbows onto the ground, but rather the elbows would be kept away from his sides and also raised off the ground. And the feet in sajda would also be kept together, that a person would place the heels of both his feet together with the toes against the ground facing towards the qibla in this manner. And then in the sajda, a person would recite the tasbih, Subhana Rabbi al-A'la, thrice or any other odd number of times. And then you would come up from the posture of sajda into the posture of jalsa. And when sitting in the posture of jalsa, the hands would be placed on the thighs with the fingertips at the edge of the knees, and the hands would be kept, the fingers would be kept in the normal position, not widely kept apart, nor tightly closed, but just normal. And one's gaze would be fixed towards his lower chest or his lap. And the feet would be kept such that a person would be sitting on his left foot with his right foot erect, and the toes of both the feet would be facing towards the Qibla. And a person would sit in the posture of Jalsa with Ta'deel Arkan, that you will not rush towards the second Sajda, but rather you would wait for to come at ease, and then you would go into the second Sajda. And then upon the completion of the second Sajda, you would say the Takbir and come up to the standing posture. And again, when saying the Takbir, from the posture of Sajda to the Qiyam, to the standing posture, you would commence the Takbir as soon as you raise your head off the ground, and then you would end of the Takbir once you reach the standing posture. And when getting up from Sajda, one would first raise the forehead, then the nose, then the knees, then the hands, and lastly the knees. That a person will not take support of his hands and then get up, but rather if a person is fit, then he will just get up immediately and quickly in coming up to the standing posture. And then you would complete the second rakat as normal. And upon the completion of the second rakat, then if it is a two rakat salah, then you would remain in the posture of qa'da, reciting the tashahud, tahiyyatu lillah. And upon the completion of the qa'da, the tashahud, you would recite durood Ibrahim, followed by the dua, masnoon dua, Allahumma inni zalamtu nafsi zulman kathira. And if it is a three rakat salah or a four rakat salah, then upon the completion of the tashahud, the tahiyyat, one would then stand up to complete the third and fourth rakat. And then when sitting in tashahud in the qa'da position, then you would sit in the same manner as you would sit in jalsa. That is, you would be sitting on your left foot with the right foot erect and the toes of both the feet facing towards the qibla. The hands will also be placed on the thighs with the fingers at the edge of the knees. And then in the tashahud, when reaching ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, then you would form a ring with the middle finger and the thumb and saying Allah ilaha, and upon saying, and then you would, together with that, you would raise the index finger. And when saying illallah, then you would lower the index finger. And this would be, the fingers would be kept in this position, in this manner, till the time of salam, once a person completes the salah. And then when completing the salah, you would complete the salah by making salam first to the right. And when turning the head, one would turn his head to such an extent that the person behind would be able to see his cheek. And a person's gaze at that time would be kept towards his shoulder. And when making the second salam, a person would immediately commence the second salam upon the completion of the first salam without stopping in between when facing towards the Qibla. But rather, as soon as you finish off the first salam, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, then you would commence with the second salam, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.